सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So last time we saw about three verses, two of which were very important. We'll quickly go over them. Verse number three, Bhagwan talks about those who don't have faith in this teaching. Like I said, faith is extremely important. It is essential even in the material world. Unless we have faith, we would not have gone to bed. We would not have started for work. If we didn't have faith that we are going to reach, we cannot do anything without faith. We have the faith that I can do this, and that's where I start doing it. And then when I accomplish it, then, you know, the faith strengthens. So with the spiritual knowledge, faith becomes even more important because the student starts in ignorance. He doesn't know anything. And now the guru is going to tell him things which he has never heard before from anybody. So he needs to have faith that the guru is telling the truth. Until he starts getting the knowledge little by little by little. Once he starts getting the knowledge, like he's going through a dark tunnel, and once those little rays of light he starts seeing, then he knows that there is light at the end of the tunnel. So blind faith to begin with, actually it's totally blind faith because we know nothing, student knows nothing. As the teacher tells us things, and we follow the tenets that have been told, then we will start experiencing whatever the teacher is saying that we will experience. And once we start experiencing that little by little, first it begins with peace of mind, acceptance, you know, all those positive qualities. We start giving up all the negativities and those sort of things. Mind becomes more peaceful. And then this is how faith becomes stronger and stronger. So Bhagwan says that the one who does not have faith and he's listening, he may be, first of all, he will not listen only. He will not come for satsang. But okay, even if he comes, then every time there'll be a doubt. Who knows whether this is true? Who knows whether this is true? And then what happens is he's not getting the benefit of that knowledge at all. So he will never get relieved from the thraldoms of sansar. Means from birth and rebirth, from the cycle of birth and rebirth, he will not. He will die and he will come back again. And not only that, there is no guarantee that he will come back to human life. Depending on what sort of life he has led, he could go down into lower yonis of animals or plants, etc. So that is what Bhagwan says. He aprapya mam. He can never get me. He may listen and intellectually maybe even understand. Faith is at the level of the mind, by the way. It is not at the level of the intellect. So intellectually, he understands the whole concept. He may even agree with it, but then he doesn't have the faith in it that it is going to give the results that it says. Then he can never gain that oneness with the reality. Okay. Having said that, in verse 4 and 5, Bhagwan gives the supreme knowledge, his absolute self, and he starts off with Maya tatam idam sarvam. Maya tatam idam sarvam. Maya, by me. And when he says by me, he's not referring to Krishna as a form, but he's referring to the Supreme Reality. And that we understand by Jagat Avyaktinam, Avyaktimurtinam, Avyaktamurtinam, Avyaktamurtinam. Avyakta means unmanifest. What is unmanifest is formless. It is formless. And because it is formless alone, it can support all forms. One example is of the movie screen. The movie screen is always wide. It doesn't matter which, what kind of IMAX, OmniMax, all kinds of different theaters we have. Even in our planetarium, you know, on the roof of that dome, they project the pictures of the sky, etc. But that is all painted white, always. Because it is only white that can support all the colors. If the screen was red, it would not support the red color. If it was green, it will not support that color. So because the screen is colorless, it can support all colors. Same way, because the supreme reality is formless, it can support all the forms. That part needs to be understood very well. And tatam idam, idam is referring to the entire world of names and forms and objects and everything. So here, one aspect of it, we saw that the it is what he's referring to is that substratum, he's referring to the rope. And the snake, in the example of the rope and snake, the snake will take exactly the shape and the size of the rope. It cannot extend beyond the rope. So if the rope is small, 6 feet, then the snake also will be 6 feet. If it is 12 feet, it will be 12 feet. So whatever we see in this universe, it is the same way. Whatever we see, there has to be the substratum beneath it, underlying it. Like if you see a snake which is 20 feet long, the rope cannot be 10 feet. The rope has to be 20 feet as well. So whatever the universe that you're experiencing right now, through the telescope, the stars, the galaxies, everything, know that the supreme reality is everywhere. Of course, Purusha Sukta also says that not only that I'm there, but I am even extending beyond that, where you can't even see things. Okay, so that part is to be understood here very well, that Maya is not referring to Krishna. Another way of looking at it, which I also told you, is where, if you take the example of the water, the ocean, and the wave, there is the relationship between wave and wave, relationship between wave and ocean, ocean and wave, and then finally water. So this Maya is referring to that water, which can take the form of the ocean, as well as the waves, as well as the bubbles, as well as the foam and whatever else is there on top of the surface of the ocean. So the water can take any form. And then the wave and the ocean are nothing but the water. So the name and the form of the wave, of the bubble, of the foam, of the ocean is ultimately nothing but water. And so when he says, I pervade everything, water pervades all these, same way the supreme reality pervades everything that we see and experience. Plus more, we don't even know that part, but at least let us say that whatever we are experiencing. Another way of looking at this is, in Upadesh Sar, Ravan Maharshi, Bhagwan has said that there are two types of thoughts, aham and idam, if you remember Upadesh Sar. So the aham is the I thought, okay? And the idam thoughts, means the thoughts of the world, are based on the I thought. And how do I know this? How do I know that? Why is it based on the I thought? If you look at your experience of deep sleep, when you're in deep sleep, do you know what is happening outside, whether there is a snow or storm or rain or sunshine? Once you go to sleep, and the reason is that the eye folds in the deep sleep. Because of the eye folding, the entire idam, the entire world also folds. So this world is dependent on that aham alone. And when we wake up, then the world immediately manifests for us. We know that where we are, how long we slept, or what is going on outside the house, etc., etc. So this aham, does it have any form, is the question now. Because here we are saying that Maya doesn't have any form. Does aham have a form? Think about it. So this aham, various people will refer to aham in different ways. Like I might say I'm 5'4". But somebody else is going to say, no, I'm 6 foot. Somebody else is going to say, I'm 5 foot. Somebody else is going to say, I am fat. Someone else is saying, I'm thin. I'm tall. I'm short. I am fair. I am dark. I've got blue eyes. I've got green eyes. So the eye is the same, but you see the variety that that eye is going through. And that variety is possible only because that aham has no form. Itself, it is formless. And therefore, it becomes fat in some, it becomes thin in some, it becomes tall, it becomes short, it becomes dark, it becomes fair, it becomes long-haired, it becomes short-haired, it becomes no hair, it becomes gray in some. So that aham can take any color and any form because it has no form and it has no color and it has no name. So therefore, it can take any name. I am Jaya, I am so-and-so, I am X, I am Y, I am Z, I am A, I am B, I am C. So that aham is what he's referring to here in this verse. That is the substratum upon which the dance of the names and forms is going on. It is the rope upon which the dance of the snake is going on, which is frightening us. Okay? So Maya, this is what he's saying here, that I, as the supreme reality, pervade this entire universe. But I am in unmanifest form, and therefore most of the people do not recognize me. They also don't recognize that all of these forms are in me. The snake is in the rope. The rope is not in the snake. That's what he's saying. Nurture aham teshu avastita means they are dependent on me. I am never dependent on them. I can exist without the names and forms. Water can exist without there being an ocean, without there being any waves, without there being any bubbles, foam, etc. But the waves and the ocean and the bubbles in the foam cannot exist without water. That is what he means by the second line. Matsthani sarvabhutani. All the waves and the foam and the bubble are in me. This is what the water is saying. But I am not in them. And I am not in them means I am not a shareholder in their joys and sorrows. So for us, as individuals, we go through joys and sorrows, ups and downs, whatever that we are experiencing, the Supreme Reality remains unaffected by that. If you take the example of electricity, if the bulb can be fused, bulb can be 40 watts, 60, 100, whatever, electricity is not getting fused ever. Electricity is not becoming 40 watts because you're putting a 40 watt bulb. That doesn't mean electricity is 40 watts. It's the bulb. It is the upadhi. That is also one way of understanding this. That the electricity never gets affected because of the things, appliances that are plugged into it. But the appliances cannot work without electricity. Electricity can remain whether the appliances are there or not. Computer plugged, unplugged, bulb unplugged, fan, nothing is happening to the electricity. Okay? So the Supreme Reality supports all the names and forms. Itself is without any names and forms. And whatever is happening to the names and forms doesn't affect the Supreme Reality. So when the names and forms become happy, Supreme Reality is not. If the name and form is becoming a doctor, an engineer, getting an award, not getting an award, becoming sad, becoming happy, becoming whatever, the Supreme Reality remains unaffected. Okay? So right after this, he goes on to say, Nacha matsthani bhutani, but they are not in me. Yo pashyame yoga maishwaram. So they are not in me. Now he's talking in verse number 4, he was talking from the standpoint of Ishwara. When we say wave, ocean, and water, we are referring to Jiva, the individual, Ishwara, and the Supreme Reality, water. So in the previous verse, he was talking from up to the level of ocean, up to the level of Ishwara. So there is the Jiva, the full names and forms, and they are dependent on Ishwara. But Ishwara is not dependent on them. And now he says, but understand that in me there really is nothing. So if you ask me as pure consciousness, why did you do this? I'm going to say, what did I do? I've done nothing at all. And that's why I told you that when we want to ask for something, we cannot go to the Supreme Reality. We have to go to Ishwara. Because Ishwara is the one that is all-powerful and can grant us whatever that we want. Pure consciousness cannot grant us. Because in the eyes of pure consciousness, there are no eyes, but in his vision or in his eyes, we do not even exist. That is what he means. Nacha matsthani bhutani. You do not exist and yet you see this. So this is my glory, that you see this entire illusion. Also, the point here is that the world is an illusion. It is not there. It only has a relative existence. It is not a permanent existence. Things are constantly changing. They are ephemeral. They are impermanent. And that's why they are illusory. We are not saying they're false, but we are saying they're illusory. And so when I, you know, whatever I feel, you know, it's going to go away. Everything is going to change. So that is what he means, that even though there is nothing, yet you see this entire world, this dance of names and forms. And that is my Aishwarya. That is my glory. That without there being anything, you can see. Bhuta bhranna cha bhutasto mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. I am then the dwelling in me, I am the efficient cause. So I told you, there is efficient and material cause. In the case of the Supreme Reality, he is both for us. He is himself the efficient cause as well as the material cause. Example which Upanishad gives us in this regard is that of the spider web. So the spider itself, out of its saliva, builds the web and then swallows it himself as well. So it's coming from the spider and then going back into the spider. So the spider becomes the efficient and the material cause. Same way, the Supreme Reality is the efficient and the material cause. And that itself also indicates that this entire thing is an illusion. That he being this, being the cause of everything. And yet he says he has not done anything, which he hasn't. And therefore, it is Aishwarya, it is his glory that you see it. It's an illusion. It's like a magician show, actually. You know, you go for a magic show and then, wow, you are so impressed because now the magician is presenting all these things on the stage, you know, taking out a rabbit from the hat or putting a woman in a cupboard and then cutting that cupboard into half and then a woman just walks out. So that is his Aishwarya. That is his glory, the magician's glory. So this entire world is like that. It's an illusion. All right. So those two verses, very, very important. Now, he gave the principle in these two verses. Now he gives an example from our day-to-day life for ease of understanding. Okay. So verse 6. Yatha kashastito nityam vayu sarvatra gomahan tatha sarvani bhutani matsthanityupadharaya. As the mighty wind moving everywhere rests always in space, the akasha, even so know you all beings rest in me. In Tattva Bodh, when we studied the creation, how creation came about, we know that there was the Supreme Reality and Maya was invoked. Once Maya was invoked, the Supreme Reality was known as Ishvara. And then from Maya, Maya is Trigunatmak. It is of the nature of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. The five elements, the materials came about because the entire world of names and forms is made out of the five elements, great elements. And the first among them was space. Because unless space was created, where would you hold the other things? That's why you have to try and imagine the Supreme Reality without space. We cannot. Our intellect, anytime you say, where is it? There'll be a space. So space is always inferred. So space is considered the closest to the Supreme Reality. And this is what he's saying. Just like all these things are held in space, all the beings are held in me. Now, what happens is, in space, if you see the comparison, all the things are held in space. The air is held in space, water is there, fire is there. But is the fire making the space hot? Space, air, I'm not talking about air. Think about it. Is the water making the space wet? If I spit in space, do you think the space is getting, air is getting contaminated, but is space getting contaminated? Space, therefore, remains untouched by anything that is happening in it. There can be bloodshed and there can be anything going on, vulgarities or good things, fragrance, bad odor, no matter what there is in space, space remains untouched. And that's why space is the closest, we say, to same way Supreme Reality says that murders may go, wars may go on amongst you yourselves, but I am holding that entire war or whatever bloodshed is going on, but it is not making me bloody. It doesn't, the blood is not affecting me. I don't get wet by the blood. Even space is not getting wet. Think about it. Space also is not getting wet. So something which is even more subtle than space, how can it be even touched? See, even in chapter 2, Bhagwan has one description of the Supreme Reality that Bhagwan Shri Krishna has given is water cannot wet me. That's, say, you know, fire cannot burn me. The sword cannot cut me. So forget going up to the supreme reality. These things, this sword cannot even cut space. Think about it. Water cannot even wet space. Fire cannot even heat space or burn space. How you can go beyond space and then touch the supreme reality? So here that example he gives, that space, just like space remains untouched, I remain untouched. Because we said in the earlier verse that the supreme reality does not get affected by the joys and sorrows of what is happening in the names and forms. Okay, so that way. So that is one way of looking at it. Space is untouched. Then space can stay on its own. See, you can have an empty house. But if you want to put things, you need space. So space can stay without the thing. So space can also say, you depend on me. I do not. I can stay independently alone. We can create a vacuum in space. We can even remove the air and we can create vacuum and nothing is happening to space. So space can remain without anything in it, but other things need space to be held in. And that's also the reason that space was created first. And that also is the reason that we recognize space as an element, because there is a school of philosophy which does not even recognize space because they can't see space. So they say whatever we see earth, we see fire, we see water, and we feel the air, we perceive it. So only there are only four elements. There is no space. But then their philosophy doesn't stand. The question is, where are these four being held? How can you hold something without space? It was like one child was doing some chemistry experiment and he said to his teacher, he said, I've created a solvent which will dissolve anything and everything. And the teacher said, where are you going to hold that solvent? If it is going to dissolve everything, how would you hold it? So without space, nothing can be held. So space is inferred. Understand that you might say that, oh, but I'm looking and there is empty space in front of me. No, what you're looking at is light. You're not looking at space. You're inferring that there is space because there is light. And that's why when you walk in a dark room, you need to push your hand forward to make sure that there is space and then you move forward. You cannot see space. Okay, you can only see light. So same way, the supreme reality has to be inferred. You can never perceive the supreme reality. It has to be inferred that, yes, if something is existence, there is an existence principle behind it. And to experience it, then you need to experience it within yourself. Okay? So that's why he gives the example of space. One thing is, space is untouched by whatever is happening in it. Space is cannot be seen, just like the supreme reality. Space can stay on its own. Supreme reality can stay on its own, but we cannot stay on without the supreme reality. We cannot be, you know, so objects cannot stay without space. Space can stay without objects. And then whatever happens in space, it always, space is not getting contaminated at all. So same way, the supreme reality we need. Supreme reality doesn't need us. Supreme reality is untouched by all the joys and sorrows or the miseries or whatever that is going on in the world. All right. So this is, he gives a day-to-day example for ease of understanding. This is what it is. Now he will go into creation. I told you in the beginning only, there are seven topics that this chapter deals with. So we said, what happens to those who do not have faith and absolute self we have dealt with. Now he's coming to the creation. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakrutim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrujamyaham. Sarva bhuta, all beings, okay, we'll do 7 and 8 together because they are just like they're connected. All beings, O Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, go into my Prakriti nature at the end of a Kalpa. I send them forth again at the beginning of the next Kalpa. Excuse me. Prakrutim swamavashthabhya visrujami punapunaha bhuta gramamimam krishnam avasham prakruter vashat. Animating my Prakriti, I, again and again, send forth all this helpless multitude of beings by the force of nature, Prakriti. So now he's bringing in the concept of Prakriti. I told you that as the supreme reality, there can be no creation because the supreme reality is a non-doer, and that position of the supreme reality can never be compromised. So he is the non-doer. He has not done anything. He already has said that there is none of these beings are in me, but then yet I see the beings. So the question arises, then why am I seeing all these things and where have they come from? So therefore he says, Sarva Bhutani Kaunteya Prakrutim Yanti Mamikam. They have come from my Prakruti. Prakruti is Maya. We have seen this concept many times, but we will go over it once again. Prakruti or Maya is the inherent power of the Lord. Okay. The inherent power, when invoked, and we'll also see when it gets invoked, then the supreme reality is known as Ishvara. So Ishvara, wielding the power of Maya. And what is Maya? Maya is a mixture of Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, the three gunas. So it, with these three gunas, how are these three gunas used? Tamas provides the material for the, because see, for any creation, first of all, material is needed. Okay. Rajas provides the dynamism, because if you want to make something, then there has to be some activity. So Rajas needs to be there. And to, how to use that material to make something, like how do I use the clay to make a pot? That is knowledge, and that comes from Sattva. So in activating these three gunas, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, Sattva giving knowledge, Rajas giving the dynamism, Tamas giving the material, the creation is made. Kalpakshaya punastani kalpadav visrujamyaham. So at the beginning of the kalpa, kalpa is four yugas. We talked about this in chapter 8. I'm not sure whether all of you were there for the chapter 8. So one kalpa is four yugas. The four Hindu philosophy, we believe, or Bhagavad Gita says that the four yugas, so Satya Yuga, Treta, Dwapara and Kali Yuga. There are four yugas. These four yugas, so Kalpakshaya, so in the beginning, the it starts, creation begins with the first yuga, Satya Yuga. Understand that creation is a circle. It is not a straight line. So please do not ask the question when exactly this Satya Yuga began, because it is cyclic and it is going on round and round and round. So many, many kalpas have already happened. Please understand this. Then many kalpas have happened. So we have gone through these four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dwapara and Kali Yuga many times. And right now in this particular cycle of creation, we are in the Kali Yuga. We are in the first quarter of Kali Yuga. So he says, in the beginning of the kalpa, I create these beings, and at the end of the kalpa, they visrujamyaham, they merge in me. There is pralaya, there is a dissolution. Question is, when does this first creation, first yuga happen? Then it is said that it happens at the beginning of the day when Brahmaji wakes up. Brahmaji is the creator. When he opens his eyes, this creation comes into being. And his one day is 4,000 kalpas. There's a figure there. So there are n number of kalpas which constitute his one day. So as long as he's awake, this cycle of creation and destruction goes on. And when he sleeps, then this whole merger happens. So pralaya happens, which is kalpadav. So at the end of the kalpa, at the end of 4,000 kalpas, he will go to sleep. So these cyclical creations will keep on going for 1,000 times. Okay. And then there will be. Now, the question is, when is exactly Maya invoked? So Maya, what happens is, right now, this creation is going on. It's in full force. There are all these individuals who have all these vasanas, desires in the mind in unmanifest form. So all of us, when we die, there is a set of desires that we are carrying. Okay. Now we take birth because the creation is going on. We take birth, etc., and it's going on like this. Now at the time of pralaya also, there will be a set of individuals who will have these vasanas in unmanifest form. at the end of the kalpa, because it's not that everybody will get realization. So there will be these. They go into pralaya, they go into dormancy, they like hibernate. You know how bears and rats and all in the winter, they hibernate. So that's what happens to them. They hibernate, these vasanas in pralaya, they remain there, they don't get destroyed, they just hibernate. Now what happens is, when they fructify, when they become mature, they start stirring up. You know, there is a stir in there. And that is what is meant by invoking maya. That is what is meant. If you take the example of an individual, let me tell you, it will be very easy for, because this is at the total level, totality. You know, every night when, do you know when exactly we fall asleep? Every night we fall asleep when the vasanas for that day are fulfilled. Until then, we can't go to sleep. That's why we say, oh, I couldn't sleep for a long time last night and all these thoughts were going through my mind and all that, right? Or sometimes, oh my God, I didn't even know when I fell asleep. I just fell asleep. Unless the vasanas for that particular day are over, you will not fall asleep. And when do you wake up? You wake up when those vasanas start stirring within you. We think that the alarm clock woke us up. But think about it. If you don't put an alarm clock, are you not going to naturally wake up at some time or the other? Maybe not at your usual time. Maybe an hour late. Maybe 2 hours late. Can you just go on sleeping till somebody comes and wakes you up, or until there is an alarm clock? You will wake up. And that is what tells you that now the vasanas for today's day have now fructified and they need to be fulfilled and therefore have woken up. This is exactly what is happening at the total level. Now imagine this entire totality at the end of the kalpa, at the end, you know, of Brahmaji's day. Brahmaji is going to sleep now. So what is happening is all these vasanas are fulfilled and now Brahmaji will go to sleep. And when he sleeps, it's his total vasanas, not his. When we sleep and I sleep, it's only my vasanas that have been fulfilled. I'll fall asleep. When they start stirring in the morning, I will wake up. So then what is happening is all these vasanas, they will go into dormant form and they will remain there in hibernation. And then they will stir up, and when Brahmaji's day, when he wakes up, then this creation will form again. Is that clear? Is there any doubts? Is there any questions? We'll talk about that. Now the next part, now question arises is that, how do you know that the same vasanas are coming back and jivas are coming back again and again? At the individual level, it's very easy to understand. I go to bed and I only wake up, right? I have the same mind, the same worries, the same thoughts, the same happinesses, same sadnesses, whatever that I have, I only wake up. How do you know that, okay, this total, everybody is gone now, everybody is coming back? Because nobody is coming back in the same form. They're coming up back in different forms. So to clarify that, Bhagwan now here, he says, Prakrutim Swam Ashtabhya. Swam Ashtabhya means keeping Prakriti under my control. Prakriti is always under his control. Prakriti is his servant. We are the servant of Prakriti. We are the servant of the three gunas. And he is the master of the gunas. That is what. Visrajami puna punaha. This puna punaha is very, very important here. Again and again. So same beings are coming again and again. That is what tells us. That is why he's saying this. That don't think that every time there is a creation, there's a whole new. This is what also gives us that connection between the previous birth and this birth. That is why, you know, we are born and then somebody suddenly likes one thing, doesn't like another thing. Where is it coming from? It has to come from the past birth. Gurudev used to give the example of Beethoven, the child prodigies. Recently, somebody sent me this thing. Maybe somebody saw it also on Ellen show, that this little child is playing two pianos with two hands. He's an Indian kid, like maybe 10, 12 years hardly. How in 10 years he learned to play two pianos, different music, huh? Not same music. He's playing different music at the same time, simultaneously, sitting in between two pianos, one hand on this one hand on this one, and he's playing it. How do you explain that? How can you explain that? If the person was 60 years old, 70 years old, you can say, okay, he practiced since his childhood. This child is only 10 years old. he was invited from India for some, the greatest of something like some show in States. And then Ellen DeGeneres interviewed him and he actually played. So this is what tells us that there is rebirth. And it's that individual soul, his soul, would have done a lot of practice in the previous births. Therefore, when he take, and that practice has remained halfway. So when he took birth here, immediately he got all that. We see that in chapter 6, Bhagwan says. Chapter 6, Bhagwan Arjuna asks that those who are doing these spiritual practices and they die in between, what happens to them? What happens to their practice that they've done? Bhagwan says, no worries. They will pick it up. They will pick up their thread. That's why we see that various people are coming into this knowledge at different stages because they're picking up the threads from past lives. And that is what Bhagwan is saying here, that keeping animating means, again, Prakriti is doing the same thing. Visrajami puna puna. I send all these helpless multitude of beings. Why helpless? Why are we helpless? You know, we are helpless because of our vasanas. That's why even chapter 4, he said, my birth is under my control. I know where I want to take birth. I know the womb I'm going to take birth in. I know the place. I know the time. That's why Krishna in the jail and raining and all, he took birth. Sri Ram took birth in the palace. But for us, we are helpless because we are controlled by our vasanas. The type of vasanas that we harbor during our lifetime will make us, will force us to take that type of a birth. And that's why we are helpless. Helpless because of our vasanas. So we can become less helpless by developing good vasanas. We can. That can change. But because of our vasanas, and I've given you the example many times. Somebody who wants to sleep for 22 hours a day has to come back in a cat body. And recently I was in Australia and they told me that koala bears sleep for 18 hours in a day. So it could be a koala birth. If somebody is harboring vasanas of sleeping, I want to sleep 20 hours out of the 24. And if that sort of a vasana is there, you might end up as a cat or a koala. I'm going to change that cat example to koala now. I've used cat for a long time. I just recently found out, right? So depending on what type of vasanas we have, we will get that kind of a birth. We have no choice. We have no choice. And that's why he says helpless multitude, all these multitude of beings by the force of nature. Nature, Prakriti, vasanas for us. Okay, this is what he's saying. And so there are the four yugas and you understood how. Is there anything I've missed out? If there is any questions, let me know. This is how he explains creation. I told you he'll be explaining creation. This is how creation happens because of our vasanas. And at a time of dissolution, they go into hibernation. Okay, now. Okay, you keeping Prakriti under your control, Bhagwan, now you have created all this mess, you know, as we say, such a mess, this creation is. So then you're responsible for the mess. You created the mess. So are you responsible for the mess? Now again, Bhagwan washes his hands off. Okay. Nacha mamtani karmani nibhadnanti dhananjaya udasinavadasinam. Asaktam teshu karmasu. These acts do not bind me. Because he said that I, creeping Prakriti under my control, I create, right? So then you did an action. You're telling us that when you do action, you get bound. Then are you bound? Are you bound? Are you, you know? Do not bind me, O Dhananjaya, sitting like one indifferent, unattached to those acts. This is the key here. So here he's referring to Arjuna as Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya is one of the names of Arjuna, of the many, many names. The significance of that word here is, Dhananjaya means, the reason he got that name was because for the Pandavas, he was the one who brought in the most wealth. Means, you know, previously they would go to war and he was a very brave warrior. So basically it was him and Bhima that were going to fight the wars. And so they, and he, Arjun was one who had never lost a war in his life. So when Arjun, when he conquered some king, some territory, then that king is supposed to give wealth you know, in appreciate those were the things. So he was the one that brought in the most wealth. And of course, then that king would have his loyalties towards the Pandavas, right? Because they have been defeated by the Pandavas. So that wealth, so the human resources wealth is also there. So if somebody other country attacks these guys, then that king will come and help them. So there is this human resources wealth as well, but wealth also, gold and silver and whatever of that kind. So he was the one that was the collector of the most wealth for the Pandavas. And that's why he earned the name Dhananjaya. Dhana is wealth. Ajaya is to collect. But here it is also, he's collecting a wealth of knowledge now, which so far he had not done. He, up to this battlefield, up to the day of the battlefield, it was only wealth in the sense of money, but now it is the wealth of knowledge. And therefore Bhagwan says that I'm giving you this wealth of knowledge and your Dhananjaya. Now he says, this act of mine, of creation, does not bind me at all. We are told that we are getting bound. You are not getting bind. What is the difference? So udasina vadasina. Udasina. Udasina, the break of the word is ut. Uta asina. Asina is sitting. Uta is above. Uta asina. So sitting above. What does sitting above means? Sitting above means, for Gurudev has translated, is indifferent. So he is not attached to anything. See, in actions, in English we just say action and act and all. But in Sanskrit there are three words actually. One is cheshta. One word is cheshta. One word is kriya. And the third word is karma. So cheshta is, you know, as children, I know I've done it. You're reading a book and then all the O's, you will just color it. All the D's. I don't know. Have you guys done it ever? Like if there are O's, I'm reading a book, you know, oh, then just the O with pen, I'll just color it. The D, I'll color it. It is called cheshta. It has got no meaning. Or you know, you talk on the phone and then you're doing this, like to your hair and these. And it has got no meaning, that action. In English, it will be an act of, you know, touching your hair or coloring the O's and the D's and everything. But in Sanskrit, it is called as cheshta. And what cheshta is it's actually nothing. It is not giving you merit and it is not giving you any demerit either. So it doesn't count as an action. Okay, so it doesn't bind. If I'm talking on the phone and just going like this, then I'm not doing it. Nobody's watching me. I'm not doing it for any particular purpose. I'm just doing it. So cheshta. Kriya is, an example of kriya would be talking in the sleep or kicking somebody in the sleep, walking in the sleep. People go open the fridge and eat and they don't even remember that they've eaten. So that is kriya. So there is no doership. In kriya also, there is no doership. So cheshta is even lower than kriya. There is no doership in either one. And therefore, they don't bind. They do not bind us. Because what binds is not the actual action itself. It is the doership. When I have the notion, I am the one that is doing and I am the one that is going to enjoy, that notion is what binds us. So the third thing is karma. Karma is where there is doership. And therefore, karma binds. Okay? And it binds because there is doership. Now, what Bhagwan is saying is, I am udasina, ut asina. I am seated above. Means what? I have no doership in this regard. And therefore, even understand, as the supreme reality, I told you, he's not even done the creation. He's not touched. And therefore, we also say that whatever is happening in the creation is not touching him. This is the reason. Udasinam avas asaktam, unattached. I am not attached. So that's why I told you, if somebody becomes sad, he doesn't become sad. You know why we are attached? Our child becomes sad, stressed, we are stressed. He becomes sad, we are sad. He's become happy, we are happy. That is attachment. So we are not udasin. We are not indifferent. We are not sitting above. We are sitting with them. So whatever is happening to them, it affects us. And therefore he says, asaktam teshu karmasu. So I am totally unattached to the karmas that I, it means as Ishvara. please understand here, he's talking as Ishwara, whatever has been done. And the reason he's unattached is because he is not creating as per his will. He is creating as per our vasanas. You understand that point? So he doesn't say that I will make you intelligent and I will make you dull. No, that person has harbored vasanas of becoming intelligent, so he becomes intelligent. This person has harbored this type of vasana, so he becomes like that, he or she. It's like, you know, an impartial examiner, he's reading all the papers that the students have written. Now, as per that paper, if he's going to give marks, somebody will get 100 out of 100, somebody will get 90, somebody will get 50, somebody will get failed. Is that thing binding the examiner? Examiner is not handing out marks as per, oh, I like this student, so I'll give him more marks. He shouldn't be doing it. Maybe some of them are, but very officially, the examiner is, or the judge, you know, he is judging on the basis of facts. Same way the examiner is giving marks on the basis of what is written. It is not on the basis of what he thinks of the student. If the material written is correct as per the question, then okay, more marks, otherwise less marks. So therefore, his giving out marks, whether he fails somebody or he gives less marks or more marks, does not bind him. This is the same idea over here. It does not bind him because he is not creating individuals as per his whims and fancies. He is actually creating them as per the actions that they have done and as per the vasanas that they have acquired, accumulated. So those vasanas have to be fulfilled. Therefore, I told you, he says, oh, you want to sleep for so long, then you have to come in this particular body. You want to do this, then you have to come in that particular body. So that is how the birth is there. Okay. So udasina, ut asina, and asaktam, he remains udasina and asaktam also because he's unmodified. See, unmodifying, right? He's changeless. It is the changeless substratum, we told you. So what happens to us is we go on changing as per. There are people who change as per climate also. They feel very happy when it is sunny. They feel very sad when it, you know, rains or snows or is cold or whatever, right? So we are constantly modifying. Like I told you, our aham is constantly, today I'm happy, tomorrow I'm sad, tomorrow I'm depressed, tomorrow I'm excited, this, that or not. Whereas he being unmodifying, he doesn't change. So it doesn't matter. He's not attached. He's unmodifying, so he's unattached. And because he's unattached, he's udasina. And unattached means there is no ego. Identification. Ego is identification with one thing or the other. So we get identified with our children. We get identified with the weather. We get identified with circumstances, with people. And because of that, we suffer. We modify. We change. Therefore, we go up and down, up and down. Whereas for him, he does not. There is no ego. And how do I know there is no ego? Is who will he show his ego to? He's all alone. No? Supreme reality is one without a second. There is no question. Another thing is there is no mind. Ego is at the level of the antakarana, the subtle mind. There is no subtle body for him also. That is another technical explanation of it. But here, he says that even though I have done the karma of creation, I do not get bound because I am unattached. And this is the takeaway for us from this verse is we can also go on doing karmas and we have to go on doing karmas because our vasanas are there. That's why this karma is happening because we have harbored those vasanas of doing action. So we are doing the action. Now, previously, we didn't know that. We did action, we got bound, we got a birth. The very fact that we are born tells us that we are bound. We were bound by our vasanas and therefore the birth has happened. At least now that we know, let us do all actions without getting attached, without doership and enjoyership, without thinking that I am the one that is doing it and I am the one that is going to enjoy, without those notions. So let us convert karma into karma yoga. That is the takeaway. If Bhagwan is like that, and if I want to become Bhagwan, I want to become one with him, then I should also start behaving like he does. That's why this is given. Okay. All right. Now, avajananti maam moodhaha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools disregard me when I dwell in human form. My higher being as the great lord of beings, they know it not. So moodaha, fools here, it doesn't mean uneducated or anything like that. It fools, there are different in this context. So when he's saying fools disregard me when I dwell in human form. So one aspect of this is that during that time when he was actually physically moving around on this earth, there were many, many people who did not consider him as the supreme being, as God. Okay, starting from Kansa was there, Putana was there, Shaktasur was there, Shishupal was there, Duryodhan, all the Kauravas, they thought he was a magician. He's only playing magic tricks. Because, you know, when Duryodhan wanted to capture him, then and they came together everywhere, they saw Krishna. So nobody could even, you know, tie him up or anything, right? So they said, oh, he's a Mayavi, he's a magician. So those are fools. This is what he's referring to. So there is disrespect. You know, fools are those who are disrespecting his presence, his authority, his position as the supreme reality. All right. So in those times, we know these people who did not recognize him or did not consider him as God. All right. That's one thing. Even in modern times, there are sects where they think Krishna is a Mahapurusha. They do not think of him as God. Okay. So there are people still who think like that. So that these are the different levels. Now what happens is when we come to our own self as Vedantins or as seekers, we think we are not fools. Why? Because we are totally agreeing that Bhagavan Krishna is the supreme reality. We have no doubt in our mind. So does that make us wise? Now the question to think about this is, as we go higher, what would disrespect mean at our level? Huh? We are not like Kamsa, so we are not like that. We are not even like this sect who thinks that Krishna only was a Mahapurusha, he was a great man and he's not the supreme reality. We are not also at that level. But at our level, disrespect happens when I have fear of death. Why? Because I know that the supreme reality is Sat Chit and Ananda. It is of the nature of existence, consciousness and bliss. So when I doubt that my existence is going to be over, when I think and when I'm afraid of dying, because I should actually have the faith that what is dying is the body and not the soul. But yet if I'm afraid of dying, I disrespect the supreme reality. So at our level also, we are fools. If we have fear of death, if we have any kind of fear in our mind, being students of Vedanta, we are fools. That this is what it, because what happens is when we read, we think, oh, I am not a fool because I know Krishna. No. At our level, we have to know that I am the supreme reality. Not Krishna is the supreme reality. I myself am the supreme reality. So if I have fear of death, I have disrespected the sat aspect of the supreme reality. Because for us, supreme reality is Sat Chit and Ananda. It is not Krishna or Rama or anything like that, right? Now, suffering, consciousness, represent. We are consciousness itself. We are that knowledge personified. So suffering under the influence of ignorance. And what is suffering under the knowledge of ignorance? If I still consider myself to be the body, if I still consider myself to be limited, if I still consider myself to be a miserable human being, if I still am miserable for little things, then I'm disrespecting the supreme reality. Okay? Ananda, in spite of being the source of happiness, I am running after the world, disrespecting the supreme reality. And therefore, we also, if we are doing these things, we also fall under the category of fools that he's saying here. Avajananti mam mudaha. Avajananti, disrespecting me. We are disrespecting him. We may say that, yeah, Krishna is the Lord. We have no doubt. And we truly don't have any doubt. But if we have doubt that I am not the Supreme Reality, or am I the Supreme Reality? I have disrespected his presence. Okay, please understand this. Any mudaha, the definition of a fool is anyone who pays more attention to the not self than the self, anatma. Because all these things are falling under anatma. Okay, I am that atma, but I pay more attention to anatma. My hair is going gray, I'm upset. My hair is falling, I'm upset. My body has got some disease, I'm upset. My, you know, everything upsets us, right? So that is this thing. Then my higher being is a great, because here he says my higher being. That's why the second line up, see, we, the higher being is Satchitananda. And if we behave contrary to those things, then we are disrespecting his presence. This is what he means here in verse 11. We will stop here. We will start next week with verse 12. Are there any questions? No questions. Everything is as clear. Very good. Okay. So we shall meet next. There is class next Monday, right? Yes. Okay. So we shall meet next Monday. And good night. Let's say our closing prayers then. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. Okay, good night, everybody. Hari Om. Hari Om.